to zero.
Everybody, welcome to Drive Through HR. Brian, William, and Misha come to be live every day talking about HR with the folks that actually care about it. That's right, care deeply about it. So let's get to our guests because things are going to happen on this show. I'm just building this up. Things are going to roll. So Matt Charney, welcome to Drive Through HR.
Thank you for having me back for a third helping this year, Brian. I appreciate it.
Well, my man, you have to step it up, though. This is we got rules, we have processes, we have standards on Drive Through HR. So, not high, but I mean, we have standards. I'm pretty sure we had one. We have a standard. Let me get clear on that. So, Matt, if you would introduce yourself to our lovely family, and we'll roll from there.
Yeah, sure. So, hi, my name is Matt Charney, and I am the managing editor for recruitingblogs.com, which also includes recruitingdaily.com, recruitingwebinars.com, recruitingtools.com, and a bunch of other cool destination sites like that. But essentially, what it is it's the largest dedicated social network and user-generated content portal for recruiting and talent acquisition professionals in the world. So, just took that role, and a lot of exciting stuff going on over there, and some good content already coming. So definitely encourage anyone listening to check out recruitingblogs.com and see what we got going on.
How long have you been active with Recruiting Blogs, or what was your first experience with Recruiting Blogs? Let's go there first.
Yeah, so my first experience with Recruiting Blogs, like when I came on the scene, back when all this social media content marketing thought leadership nonsense was developing, Recruiting Blogs was kind of like a premier property. So I remember, my first day at Monster, being a report from Radian 6, it's like, here's what you have to pay attention to. And Recruiting Blogs is like number two or three, I think, on that list of outlets. So, I've been following them and joining the community since at least 2009. But I had the experience, this is still one of the coolest things I did professionally, when I was at Monster, partnering up with the team there to put on Recruit Fest in Boston back in 2010. So, I was able to work pretty close with them, understand their business model, and, that was really the first exposure I had, but certainly it's been a community that I've been following for, 5 years now.
What's it like to build a community? I mean, Erie has a pretty strong recruiting community, obviously. I think there are a lot of people that follow recruiter.com, et cetera. Like, first of all, what's it like? Is it daunting, knowing that you have, 60,000 people that are paying attention to you and kind of what you're writing and what y'all are saying? Like, what are the elements of community management and community development that's both daunting and exciting?
So I think, certainly one of the things that I've always just kind of been astonished with is that Recruiting Blogs, operates under a model whereby it seems to be self-sustaining and self-policing. So it's a very interesting position. So coming out of the B2B marketing world, you constantly try to create, like, owned engagement, right? So you ask a bunch of questions like, what do you really think about bosses today? Tell us your best boss experience. And then it's crickets, right? I'm coming into a world that whether or not there's any prompting, people are choosing to engage on and generate content. And so I think that for me, the most daunting thing at this point in time is really being able to take that step back and listen and engage. And I think that coming out of the brand marketing world, you know, you definitely have the inclination to try to put a framework or messaging or an approach towards something and really try to own it. And I think that the challenge has become really this has been sustaining for so long and people are still so active. How do I add value to the conversation without putting out too many rules and regulations and kind of killing that magic mojo that made it happen? So really, I think moving from owning to enabling that conversation is pretty hard. But, you know, at this point in time, I think just trying to figure out what it is that membership wants and why they continue to go there is going to be a really important step. So I think it's a very unique community in that sense as well, since it's, there's very little intervention that's gone on from an editorial perspective.
All right. Let's build an editorial calendar together. You, me, and Brian. What are the 12 most important – Yeah, thanks, Brian. If you could be a little bit more sarcastic, that'd be great. What are the 12 most important – at least put yourself on mute when you're doing that.
I can't help, man. This is good stuff. And off,
no,
by the way, Ryan Leary was one of the first people that I actually was able to meet kind of in the our little HR social ecosystem. And has just been a good dude from the very first conversation. And he's part of, you know, works with Matt and stuff. So I just want to put that out there. He's a good guy. So,
yeah, and he knows his stuff, too.
Do you have any other other ads or sponsorships that you'd like to drop there, Brian? Thanks.
Please continue on.
Okay. So, Matt, we're going to build an editorial calendar. 12 most important things to recruiters. If you were building this calendar, what are some of those things that you would put on that calendar?
I would say that is – see, I can't count to 12, which is why I started recruiting in the first place and why I decided to move to the state of Texas. So basically what I think – what I found recruiters want, and this is in general – from a content perspective, are things that will operationally make their job easier and better. So I think that anything that can speak to not necessarily lofty thought leadership, like how to create a magnetic employer brand, but rather how to use an employer brand to actually attract the people who you need for the role that you want, you know, I think that's really important. And so, you know, in building out an editorial calendar and themes, I mean, you're going to look at things like, you know, just-in-time hiring, pipeline building, candidate experience, you know, all of these consultant speak terms. What it ultimately comes down to is how do I put the right talent in the right place at the right time and do that in a way that makes me look like an all-star, because a lot of recruiting is self-preservation, right, which is why we've over-complexified what's essentially a transactional kind of process of finding somebody, putting them in, you know, building a case for why they should come join and why they should be hired. So, you know, I really think that ultimately, you know, taking that level of complexity away and being able to speak directly to how can I get my job done is going to be the most effective editorial theme, as opposed to trying to identify SEO trends and then you get mired in, you know, video recruiting and candidate experience and things that don't really impact that you're working practitioner on a day-to-day basis. And so I think that those themes have not fundamentally changed for years.
Gotcha. So first of all, we are going to answer the question. We will create 12, I promise. But
okay. The
difference between corporate recruiters and third-party recruiters, in your opinion, is third-party recruiters are driven by making money first, and maybe a subpart of that is making their job easier, whereas corporate recruiters are getting paid a salary. So they're making more money is not the key driver, but making their job easier is the key driver. Do I have that correct?
I would say that historically that's been true, but given the new model and drift really towards RPO and you know, project recruiting, I think that you know, third-party recruiters are in many ways the new corporate recruiters, and the old corporate recruiters are actually brand marketers. So I kind of am seeing a shift in those roles to a certain extent.
Okay. So would an overarching theme – across all of your 12 months be making your job easier?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So, see, folks, we can do this. We, three intelligent men, can come together and create an overarching theme. And the overarching theme is we're going to make your job easier. Correct?
Yes, absolutely. In a vendor-unbiased manner.
Okay.
You got an amen on this side.
Well, you know, Matt, let me push you on that a little bit. Make your job easier. Who cares if you're vendor bias? If the outcome is the same, if you promise that we're going to make your job easier and you fulfill on it, who cares if you're vendor bias or unbiased?
That's a good point, and I think that that you get into the cost point and the recruiters being able to deliver an ROI. And so, you know, if I'm trying to sell a product with my content, at the same time I'm pushing that message in a non-objective way, and telling a story through often biased research and or, you know, paid quote-unquote influencers. I think that is doing a disservice to the bigger trends by putting them through the filtering of brand messaging around the product, which is good business, right? But at the same time, it's also extremely biased.
Yeah, and William, just and Matt, to your point, I actually think making people's jobs easier is giving them here's two people to look at, right? I mean, literally direct and say here's a few things and here's a couple people to look at. Here's why they're good folks. Because you have a point of familiarity with somebody and credibility, I think that's the biggest overarching theme that I've ran into is people are just overwhelmed and don't do anything. We talked about social learning, or we talked about implementing XYZ, and it's too much risk for me personally. Maybe that's not what's said. So we just aren't going to do it because nobody gets fired typically because they don't take a risk. Unfortunately. So, I mean, that's being biased, I think, with the good vendors for whatever it is, based on your opinion, I think is great.
Yeah, in fact, I think what the Internet needs more of is discernment, someone that curates. And so unbiased, it's okay, but it sounds like Consumer Reports. And the problem with Consumer Reports is no one understands, you know, the fucking grid that tells you what you should buy. Having someone that actually tells you that and say, yeah, I've looked at 700. The three that are most important and the one that I would buy is this. That's biased. That's just fucking wrong.
So too is the magic quadrant, which basically creates how well you can spend money with Gartner, right? So,
But hey,
even
I got to push you on
analysis.
Yeah, I got to push you on something because when we created our overarching theme that you were a part of, we said make job easier. And then you threw in some corporate speak about, about the ROI and the business and this and the other. That's actually a conflicting goal because making job easier, if we believe that is job number one for recruiters, we don't really care if the business is profitable. We don't really care about ROI. We talk about making their job easier, not necessarily making them more profitable.
Right, but I think that making your job easier ties into self-preservation, and if a recruiter is not aligned with overarching profit motives, whether personal or enterprise, then that recruiting job is no longer going to exist because once the profit shuts off, the hiring shuts off, right?
Should we make the overarching goal making you more fulfilled?
I would say more fulfilled and strategic, perhaps, although that's obviously a big buzzword. But
is recruiting ever going to be strategic, really?
Yes, once it realizes that NACS is a CRM and that that essentially every non-tactical task is marketing, then I think recruiting does have the opportunity to become strategic, particularly given the spend on recruitment advertising.
And do you think that's what your audience wants? Again, I'm really pushing on this because if your audience wants their job to be easier, do they really care about being strategic? Are we going to have like another furniture discussion about how they want a fucking seat at the table or some other shit with recruiters too? Are we going to go through 25 years of that fucking drama?
No, I think you know what I think my audience wants is a platform to connect and to be able to share their own content, which is how it's predicated. So for me, the other avenues from a content perspective, recruiting daily, recruiting tools, those become, you know, the content marketing sides. But from, and I think that there are some definite holes in the market as far as, you know, being able to provide, a platform for unbiased, non-vendor-paid for research and opinion. But at the same time, what I think the readership wants is, mm-hmm. is limited control and the opportunity to speak with other practitioners. I am not a not a line recruiter. I haven't been since 2008. So I think that as a content marketer, I can certainly be able to give and lend value and perspective for that. But at the same time, I'm not in the trenches, so I can't speak to that audience other than to
what
they're doing.
Let's not worry about as much about how they connect with each other, because you've got a platform, a wonderful platform for them to do all that stuff. And so whatever they share and how they share, while important to me, not as important as understanding what do you want to put in front of them and what do you think will resonate best with them thematically. Is it thematically the umbrella of helping them on this journey to becoming strategic and then 12 different ways of getting there? Or is it just making their job easier in 12 different lines of thought there?
So I think that, I mean, these are good questions. And obviously with HR Tech, I'm putting together this editorial calendar, vision, all this stuff, right? So for me, what all of that boils down to is just thinking differently. And you talk about seat at the table, blah, blah, blah. I think that there's just such an echo chamber out there. And one of the pieces of feedback that, I always hear, certainly, is that, like, you know, tell it how it is, keep it real. That approach seems to resonate. And so I think that there's so much, Me Too kind of content, like top 10 things you should be doing right now, rah-rah posts, but there aren't a lot of differing perspectives. It's like one person has an idea, everyone co-opts it, and then it becomes an SEO thing to bid on. That I think that just reframing discussions and making people think differently achieves the goal of both strategic thought as well as perhaps, positioning them in a way that they can make an informed decision that will help them do their job easier. So I guess to the broader thing is, just being able to help reframe conversations away from the echo chamber and start focusing on, you know, what people are actually saying when they say things like talent community, you know, as an example.
William, you asked a question earlier about can recruiting ever really be strategic? And I have a thought on that. I want to get both of your reactions, Matt, yours first, is the only time that I ever see recruiting really be strategic is when they completely and 100% own the budget. They're involved with it. They know exactly what it is. They know what the impact is. They're completely in control of it. And so they're running their business function or their unit, which would be talent acquisition or recruiting. That's when it truly, they become part of the business. If they're just kind of like in the minutia of just you need to get this done, totally tactical. Don't care what you call it. I mean, that's all that it is. But when they actually are involved in the budget process, the dollars and cents of it, and it should make sense, by the way, then it can become strategic. Thoughts on that?
Yeah.
Matt.
Yeah. Here's the thing. It's where recruiters are strategic when there's scarcity. And I won't use the Harvard phrase, war for talent, but where there are instances when you cannot find the talent, we all know of them in healthcare, you can't find enough nurses to work the jobs that are open today, much less 10 years from now. In Silicon Valley, you can't find a software engineer. If you could, you would offer them a blind offer of about $250,000 to come work at your shitty startup. You can't find, and in those very specific instances, recruiting has all the power. But outside of those instances, it all falls apart to what you said, Brian, about not having budget or power, authority, et cetera. But where there's scarcity, this is Economics 101, where there's scarcity, there is power. Where there is abundance, not as much power.
Yeah, well, I absolutely agree with that. I think, though, that if you take the exact opposite polarity is the other time where recruiting becomes truly strategic, which is that there is too much supply of candidates, but at the same time you have a consumer-facing brand. So how do you create customers and carry on those relationships with a consumer brand, but at the same time you're never going to hire these individuals? So I think that also becomes a strategic exercise, the exact opposite polarity. Too many candidates, not enough jobs, and you have to put them off without cutting them off, if that makes sense.
I need to, Matt, I need to push you on this echo chamber thing, because it's in your zest to not be an echo chamber or be a part of the echo chamber that I feel like you actually are going to create an echo chamber, but that's a good thing. And let me see if I can kind of convince you of this. So not the people that you've interacted with for the last 3 years. Like those people, whatever. The 60,000 people that really I would say are working the job day to day, not paying attention to what social media personality A, B, or C is thinking, those people that are still in recruiting blogs, that are engaged in recruiting blogs, I think they haven't paid attention to the echo chamber, quite frankly. If and when they have, they probably have been turned off by it because it's so far from their reality. But you're already in another echo chamber, a different echo chamber, I would say, and that's okay. Like I think that's okay. I don't think that you should run from that. In fact, I think you should own the fact that you've created a different type of echo chamber, maybe one that's a little bit more realistic, one that's, you know, maybe closer to the front line, if you will.
I mean, yes, I will own the fact that I have basically helped create or influence the conversation of a lot of the shit that I hate. The reason why, again, to our earlier conversation, is that you're trying to push product right now, right? But I think that I'm in a unique position to help correct some of those wrongs. And the recruiters I talked to who were actually working, actually, to me, that conversation focuses on the same thing as if they're talking to a candidate. That's all this shit does scare them. Like, I have to have social and personal brand.
Yeah,
I agree.
I think it's nuanced, and of course no one gets settled here nuanced, so let me just be the bull in the Chinese cabinet. I don't think that you should say what's wrong about, and in fact your hands are absolutely bloody. You've created a lot of this mess, and so I fully expect you to clean it up. So, but the thing is I think you actually need to be the translator. So I think the great role that you're going to play in the next couple of years is one that doesn't say, yeah, this concept is stupid for these elaborate reasons. I think it's more of, here's what these people are saying. Translation, here's how it makes your job easier. So it's too easy to say that a concept is stupid because 1,800 people have blogged about it or tweeted about it. Anyone can do that. I could train my 7-year-old son to do that shit. What I need from you is to say, here's a concept that those same 1,800 knuckleheads are talking about. Here's how it's important to you. Here's how it makes your job easier. And be the Sacagawea of those two different worlds. Does that make sense?
Yes, except for the Sacagawea before. But, yeah, no, I absolutely understand. Yeah, I do get that. And you know, I certainly agree with you. I think that defining any amorphous concept is going to be difficult, but I think, you know, from an editorial standpoint, you're absolutely spot on that there is a huge disconnect between practitioner and, quote, you know, thought leadership.
What are the things that make their job easier? Obviously, there's a lot in sourcing. There's a lot in technology that's going out and out in the world that you've seen, been a part of, et cetera. So there's a lot of demystifying the world of technology and bringing some of those fruits to the people and saying, hey, if you actually use this in this way, it'll make your job easier, et cetera. what other things can we steal from the other meta world and bring to this community that is recruiting blogs?
So I think that one of the things certainly is going to be, I mean, to your point about sourcing and technology are two huge ones. I think the way that the market is operating, you know, is going to be important to the conversation. So because we do have third party and corporate, you know, what do how do you work with a third party recruiter, and what are the corporate expectations and vice versa? How do you work with an MSP or an RPO? You know, I work for a global company. What are the ramifications of that across the board? And I think that those issues for me, I still haven't done enough digging through past content to identify them. But from a great deal of that content, it's really about still the transactional of I have a job, I need candidates, or I have a candidate looking for a job. And so I think that facilitating that handoff in the easiest and most seamless way possible is ultimately what this boils down to, right? If I had a magic potion to match the right person with the right job at the right time, which is what every marketing tagline boiled down to, then there'd be no need for content marketing at all, right? So, mm-hmm. I mean, that's what it comes down to, is making a hire. And everything else is basically frosting.
Here's the four themes that I think you should explore. One is the theme of how to. So how to work with an RPO, how to work with a third-party recruiter, how to hire whatever, blah, 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 blah. But basically it's the theme of I'm going to break some shit down, how to, and then you bring that to the masses. The other is theme number two is technology for dummies. So breaking down the entire ecosystem that is talent acquisition, take a technology, maybe even a category of technologies, and just break it down. Here's the 800 ATSs. Here's the four that are really getting a lot of traction. You should look at these. You breaking it down in such a way that kind of it is ripping kind of from the Four Dummies book series. Three, tips and tricks. So these are shortcuts. Again, getting back to the theme du jour of making job easier. What are the tips and tricks? When you get right down to it, here's the five interview questions. Here's the, you know, it's that type of content. And then four, this is from our good friends, Craig Fisher and some of the other people that kind of do this session on cool tools. But I do believe there's a different way to interact with technology that basically says there's only five guys on the fucking planet that are using this tool. You should probably be one of those people. Check a look at it. And I think thematically, if content is delivered, again, under the umbrella of making job easier, I think you've served that echo chamber in a very positive way.
I think those are all good suggestions, which is why I appreciate the consulting. And certainly, you know, I'd say this to anyone at this point. And William, I'm feeling that blatantly because that's what you do in the world of online content. So much appreciated. Is that if anyone has any suggestions for what's underserved in the market or what they want to hear about, I want to hear them, because you are right that I have been very definitely tied into a certain line of conversation, and I'm the first to admit that you know, I've largely lost a lot of line of sight about what's really going on in the market. So I appreciate your suggestions. Web and obviously open to yours. Anyone who's listening wants to call in with them, or just drop me a line at matt@recruitingblogs.com. Content without an audience is worthless. And so, yeah, I do want to hear what the audience wants to know about, too.
Well, good talk, Matt. And, you know, you're still a pretty decent guy, even with blood on your hands. So two things real quick. So to dovetail into the four themes, I think there needs to be a look back at the alleged trends that were going to happen and call bullshit on, like, yeah, that never happened, right? Look back the years and people are like, oh, my God, this is the new thing. This is going to happen, just to kind of put some accountability to, yeah, that was completely bullshit. I think that would be kind of cool. Two, I would officially like to change the term echo chamber to drum circle to stay with a native theme. Let's just think about that. Well, let's just think about it. Let's sit for a while.
I died a little there. Thanks.
Yeah, I know. So, but anyway, great show, Matthew. Thanks for coming on. Everybody, good Twitter stream. We're out of here. Get a hold of everybody. Let's all just hug. Okay, we're out.